Welcome to part two of our conversation with Ronald Cavall about inside the Overbrook Insane Asylum.
There's one incident that we had. Things got so bad for me for a while there, in nerves and stuff, that I had to go. I had to leave the area. I could work there because I needed it for my family and that, but we moved a distance away.
Yeah.
You know. And so the one time I went into work, where we were living at was considered beautiful, but it was considered a snow belt. So I went into work that day, and there was a forecast for snow. But down by the asylum, it was going to be just rain. So it was fine for a while, and it was just rain. But what happened was, by mid-afternoon, the rain turned into snow. And I'm talking snow. I'm talking heavy, wet snow.
Mm-hmm.
It just changed like that. I said, damn it. And I called my wife up. I said, well, how is it up there? She said, don't even bother coming back. She said, you can't even make it. My in-laws didn't live that far from there. I couldn't make it to their house. That's how bad it was. Mm-hmm. So I'm stuck here now. I have things with me there. So I'm not like without stuff to snack on or coffee. And I had one coffee maker and stuff, my office and everything. So I'm fine. So I feel that, well, I'm going to have to be here tonight. And this is like, plus around Christmas and not snowstorm. It's like December the 17th or something like that. And so what happened is I said, well, let me get myself situated. We have a storage area on Ward 13. So I went into the storage area, got out a brand new fold-out bed they have. I put a new blanket on there, two blankets, a couple of pillows in that. And I'm here. I am shooting down the corridor into my office with it. Yeah. So I'm gonna be spending the night here. And I had stuff with me and everything because you have all utensils they have there, like toothbrushes and toothpaste and everything else that I would need. So I'm spending the night. I had a little TV, so I spend the night watching TV and stuff and that, and watching the snow come down. It had to be about later on that evening, 11:30, whatever. I said, I'm tired now. So by 11 o'clock, all the wards, that's it, they're out. They're sleeping. Mm-hmm. So I figured, okay, because I don't want anybody to know I'm there. Because if they're short on help, they're going to come to me.
Sure.
So I went down the corridor through the main hall, day room, which is empty, into the bathroom at the end. I went in there and I brushed my teeth and everything and that. I came out, and as I came walking down the corridor, I can faintly hear music on a scratch record, like an old song. And I remember the song. It was that old war song I remember from movies. It was called Over There, like from World War One. You know, said the works and works over there. Some that, and I'm listening and said, where the hell is that coming from? You know? So as I got closer to where the break off between that corridor and the day room began, I felt like a chill, coldness coming over me. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I stepped into that thing, it was like stepping through a time warp. It was so odd. I just walked through, and before my eyes, I looked, and here's all these people. And I'm saying, where the hell did everybody come from? The stuff I have in my hand, I just put on the table right there, and I looked around, and it was cold. I'm talking freezing. I'm shaking. My bottom jaw was like, you know. And I'm looking around these people. There are people lying on the floor, people sitting in chairs with blankets on them and that. I'm going up to them. There's one guy, I remember him sitting around the table, and I went up to him, and I said, who the hell are you people? What's going on? He goes, it's none of your business, Mac. Don't worry about it. Just like that, within a rude, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm around, and I went up to these people on the floor, lying there with blankets on them. I pulled the blanket over them, and I reached down, like anyone would do, natural reaction. I'm reaching down for a pulse, and it was like ice. So I covered them back up, and I says, well, let me get in my office. So I took my key out, and shaken, and I walked in there, and the door is open, and I walked in, and there's a doctor and a nurse in there, and they don't belong there.
Mm-hmm.
The whole room is now changed. It's not what I had before. Everything is gone, and everything is back to where it was like maybe years ago or whatever. walked over to the desk, and there's a calendar there, a little flip calendar, and it said December 17th or 20th or whatever exact date, and it said 1917. And the word came out of my mouth next wasn't, you know, very nice, but I turned and I looked, but the two people in that room, the doctor and the nurse, looked at me and acknowledged me. They knew I was there. They grinned at me and smiled and shook their head, you know. And the phone they had on the wall there are two different phones, one on the desk, one on the wall, was like the old wooden type one where you pick it up and talk. Mm-hmm. So the doctor was just on the phone. He put the phone down. As I walked past him, I picked it up and I said, listen, there ain't nothing there, you know.
Yeah.
I went back out into these people, and they were real. They were not just visions or anything. They were actually physically there.
Yeah.
So I walked around them, and as I'm talking to them, you hear moaning and groaning and that. Some of them had on their fingertips were black. Their face around their nose and cheeks were black and that. And so I'm trying to recall over here. The one attendant, now there was a couple of them sitting there. And I went back and I had to figure this thing out because now I'm freezing to death and I'm scared out of my mind. And I asked him, I said, what is going on? You can tell me what is going on here. He says, there's nothing going on. We're all dead. And I said to him then, I said, what do you mean we are all dead?
Yeah.
We're all dead. And that, you know. But there was a combination of crying, moaning. It was like hell. People were like suffering.
Yeah.
And the snow was still coming down. And so I didn't know what to do. So I just sat down. I tried to make an attempt to go back to where the bathroom was.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get past that section. It just wouldn't let me go through. I couldn't get through it. So within that little domain that I had, I was like trapped right with these people as I looked at them, and they would look up at me and you could see their faces. They were, it was horrible. It was just, if you looked and you would have seen them, you would know what I'm saying. And I was so scared. So I just sat down after a while and I sat there, put my head down, my hand shaking. I'm going like that. You know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm probably going to be with them. You know,
sure. I mean,
that's what it felt.
If they're stuck and you were there with them. Yeah.
And so as I'm sitting there, one guy comes over and he just comes over to me. And actually, I felt it. He tapped me on my shoulder, put his hand on my shoulder. It was like somebody took, if their hand was made of ice, and just put it on your shoulder. Mm-hmm. He said, it's time for us. He goes, it's time for us to go, Mac. And I'm thinking to myself right away, you know, like that's plural. What is this, you know?
Yeah.
And just then, out of nowhere, in the day room on the left-hand side in the corner was the same area where you open the door to go onto the porch where the other gentleman I went was with. That door just flung open. And you could hear the snow because it was a blizzard and everything was just coming on in. And next thing, one by one, they started walking out, back out into the snow. And to eventually the people who were lying on the floor, and when they got up, it sounded like as if you had one of those old ice trays where you had to pull the handle on it or crack it.
Oh, God.
Because that's what it sounded like. And you'd hear it. And they're going and they're looking at me at the same time as they're passing me, like I'm going to go join them, you know, and they went through the door and the snow's coming through, and the last one went through, turned, looked at me, and then just walked through the door, and they were outside and they were gone. So I went up to the door. I looked down. Now this is fresh snow. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be at least a foot. There's not a mark. There's not a print. There's nothing. There's nothing at all. I took the door, you know, because it was like the wind was really blowing hard. I'm forcing it back closed again. I close it, you know. I put my head down for a minute. I'm going, son of a, you know, looking like this. I felt okay because I'm not with them. They're gone. They're out of here, you know.
Yeah.
The first thing I do, I ran back to my office, which is right 10 feet away, 20 feet away. Got by the office, took out my key, and the door's closed, opened up the door, and there's nobody there, and it's back to where it was, going, thank God, you know?
Yeah.
Went into, I had to go to the, funny thing, I had to go to the bathroom really bad. You know, I made a beeline that whole way, you know. Went to the bathroom, and in the meantime, I'm over there shaking so much. My hands are like nervous as well.
Yeah.
When I got back to my office, I broke out the cigarettes, put the coffee pot on, turned the TV on, stuff like that, and that was it. I was up all night long. All night. Didn't go to sleep. Didn't even need the cot. Didn't need nothing. Yeah. I was up all night. And until the next morning and stuff like that, and then the plows came around. They cleaned off the car and stuff, and I said, that's it for me. I'm out of here. And got the hell out. And that never happened again because I never stayed overnight again. Yeah. I stayed there a couple times, but it was at different periods.
Yeah.
You know. But then I started wondering, well, what the hell is this? What is going on?
Yeah.
So eventually I did some research, and it came across to me just out of the blue somewhere. And I found an old article from a paper. It was New York. I don't know. It was New York Times, something like that. And it said it in there where – this happened, that the doctor, Dr. Gray, I remember his name is, he was trying to call people, the patient's parents. He's trying to get them out of here because they were freezing to death. They had a train station in front of the asylum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was called Overbrook Train Station, and it would come in. This is the thing that puzzles me, is that they barred an engine from the train people,
yeah,
bought an engine to work the laundry. Then they said they were going to try to borrow another one to work the heating system. And I said to myself, my God, you mean the laundry was more important to them than the patient?
Oh, God.
You know, and I said, I can't believe this. But they said in the thing, the article I was reading, they said there was 24 deaths in 24 days. That's the deaths. That's that count of frostbites.
Yeah.
And that. And I said, oh, my God, this is like, it's insane. How can they be that, you know?
Yeah.
And then I just seen a friend of mine back in New Jersey send me out a book. I can't mention person's name or anything. And I'm looking through it. I'm saying, God, this is like really sweet coat and everything, you know?
Yeah.
And they mentioned it just a little bit, and they said, oh, here we go, in the fireplace. They were sitting around the fireplace. They couldn't sit around the fireplace. Once the boiler was set up and put into there, the fireplaces were plugged. The only reason they were plugged was the raccoons, squirrels, everything else would get inside. So they were plugged. I'm saying, oh, my God. And that's sad.
Yeah.
That's sad. That screwed me up. That screwed me up for a long, long time, seeing that. And took a long time to get over it.
And well, you got to be wondering, because this didn't seem like some sort of residual thing. You interacted with them, and then it kind of put dots together and go, are these people literally, and why are they sitting there still suffering at the worst point in their life all these years later? I mean, what has your mind taken you to on this as to what happened and what you were dealing with that day?
The thing is this, I don't quite could put a thing around. I kind of feel, I don't know if they wanted to let somebody know what they went through.
Mm-hmm.
The suffering in that. Because even when I talked to the priest again after that, I told him about this. He said, oh my God. He said, I can't see how you can stay there, Ron. I said, Father, I said, I have no choice. I have to. This is going to be my living from now on in that. And it says, the only thing I could do is show I felt bad for them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, there's nothing more I can do. If there was something I could do for them, I would do it. But it was out of my hands. Why they showed up there, why they decided to come back at that time, you know.
Yeah.
Was a reoccurrence at all. But I made sure around as many years as I worked there, around that time frame right there, that I was nowhere there and I was gone early that day. And that's how scared I was. Yeah, because even when one of the other incidents is when at occasions they had me come down to the hair salon. Mm-hmm. Okay. The hair salon was down in the basement down the corridor. Okay. Mm-hmm. I would go down there every now and then. They needed me, and I would have to do one or two female patients. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I was doing all the male patients throughout the whole hospital.
Sure.
So I would go down and I would take care of that too, besides that. And I did this for, as it went on for 6 months and stuff. And then at times, things slowly but surely, I started hearing voices in there and that. And I remember one time when I was washing one of the patients' hair, we would put these gloves on and that and do the best we can. And in the sink, I'm leaning over. I'm washing her hair, and the other lady who was working there asked me a question. When I turned her to answer her and stuff, I looked back, and when I looked down, the patient's hair I was washing was a corpse. I flew. I didn't know how far I could jump backwards till then.
Yeah.
But I jumped, and I went flying back, and she said, me okay. I said, I got a shock. Something hit me. I don't know what the hell. You know. And the person was back. So I approached him real slow, kept my eyes open. I'm doing it at the same time.
Yeah.
But I would hear things in there. I would hear, like next door to us, I would keep on hearing like somebody opening a refrigerator and closing it a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I never gave two thoughts about it. So there was different people in different rooms around there. And so one day I decided to ask the lady I work with. I said to her, I said, who's next door to us? She said, I have no idea. I don't think anybody's next door. I said, you're kidding me. I keep on hearing things back there. And even one day when I heard whispering, they used to have dryers back there. I went back there, put my head against the wall, and I could hear people whispering. I could hear the voices. And I said, well, there's got to be somebody there because I hear things.
Yeah.
She said, oh, Ron, forget about it. But she said, if you want to, she said, in the reception desk, there's a set of keys in there on a giant key ring that they have in there from housekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
One of those might open it, you know. So I went over one day when I was there, and when she was there, we're done doing the work, and I was kind of caught up. So I took the key ring, went over to that door, and I'm trying one key after another, and finally I found one. And when I went, it kind of turned, but I didn't want to force it because I didn't want to break it. Mm-hmm. So I took this key, went back in the hair salon, put some tape around it, and I said, I got to come back with some spray oil or something like that. And so what I did is I came back one day when I was by myself down there. My supervisor was out with the flu, so was the lady I worked with, was out sick. I was okay. So this is the day when I'm by myself. And I pick up all days to do this when there was a thunderstorm outside and everything.
Yeah.
And lightning. So I got the key, went next door, a little bottle of spray with a little tube on it. Went near it, sprayed inside a keyhole, and then worked the key for a little bit. Finally got it to start to turn, and starting to turn. All of a sudden, it went pop, and it turned real loud. Got it. And then I went to open the door, and it felt like it had a pulley on the side, a self-closing mechanism, and I'm fighting with this stupid thing. And so as I went to pull, I fell back on my rear end because I had oil on my hands and stuff. So I went back, cleaned up, went back again. I wasn't giving up. Went back. I got a wedge that we have in the hair salon. So I said, when this door opens, I'm going to wedge it open. And as I'm pulling through it and like that, you could hear things. And I went through and boom, it stayed open, you know, and I put the wedge there. But the smell was horrendous. The smell stunk to high heaven. It stunk like all hell.
Yeah.
And so what happened was I just then stepped back from wherever it was, the smell and that. And there were times when this is one thing that was weird. There was times when I went past that room and that door. I would visually see a figure of a woman standing there who was dead. And that, and I would just write it off, you know, because I've seen so much. I would just go, oh, yeah, sure.
Sure.
So, but when I got that door open and got a wedge there and stuff, I stood back, went and waited for about at least a good 10 minutes or longer. Went back in and it was dark and you could see the lightning and stuff, but the lightning lit up the back window. So I reached over to the wall for a light switch. I found it. Now, when I hit it on, there were lights above me, fluorescent lights. The problem was, as they went on, they flickered and they burst one right after another. So I backed up to get away from that. And when they finally all crashed to the floor, I waited a few minutes, made my way in there, pushing the glass aside, went right through the window, and they had the shades and were kind of musty feeling. I kind of moved them to the side. They had one of those pull-up old blinds that you would pull down, you know, and fling it up, right?
Sure.
Well, when I pulled it down, it just came down, you know, in pieces. I turned to my left, which was where the hair salon was, and I seen an unfinished wall. You see the 2x4s in that.
Yeah.
And I looked up, and I seen the pipes running across, and I said, oh, hell, we got a drop ceiling in there, you know? I said, hell, we got the same tile, same flooring, you know, kind of, said, kind of so darn dark and lightning strike. So then I turned, well, the hell with this, there's nothing here. And then I turn and I look, and boom, there it is. There's a 4-refrigerator unit for the bodies. You know,
yeah.
And I walk up to the one, I opened up that door, and I just took a peek inside, you know, very slowly. And then I closed it, and I said, wait a minute. And I opened up again, and I closed it a few times. I'm saying, this is the noise I was hearing. This is it. You know, and a little too near, then I said, okay, this is enough for this. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
Closed the door, went down. I walked down to the end of the corridor where they had a supply there, and one of these lady there who's been there for quite a few years. I said, hi, how are we doing? She said, fine, how are you doing, Ron? I said, let me ask you a question. I said, you know, what was the hair salon before it was a hair salon? She said, oh, that was the morgue. I said, you're kidding. She said, no. That's where they used to bring the bodies in, right there. I said, oh. And I was like, you know, my voice is, oh. I said, you know, I said, do you ever hear that guy come down here with a gurney all the time? I heard him in the constant whistle. She said, yeah, he's not here anymore. He passed away. That used to be the guy who used to bring the bodies going to the wards. I said, you're kidding me. Why I was in the hair salon many times by myself, I would hear a gurney come down that long corridor and somebody whistling. But every time it got close enough to where the hair salon was, I look outside, there's nobody there. And I said, what the hell's going on here? You know, so a lot of these things didn't make sense to me because I couldn't put anything together.
Yeah.
And then when I found out that was the morgue, and I always wondered why in the hair salon do they have a drain in the middle of the floor? You know, so this is was a this is where they did all the autopsies. And that and everything. And like I said, I in there, the voices and the noise and everything else, there's a lot more that goes to it. I don't go through too much of that
because
I like too many things. But it's unreal being in there. And I says, how the hell can the people be in there and not realize what this is?
Yeah.
Because I found that they had the Public Works came down there, and they turned it into a hair salon. They built that partial wall to block off the refrigerator units. You know, all the equipment from the old place, like the tables, the table, and that, were moved into the room, on another room next to us, and all piled up. So that's where they used to cut everything apart. That's where the nurses who would come down when they would do their training. They spend 2 weeks there. They would go down there and watch the autopsies being performed.
Wow.
Because you figure at the time, this place had over 1,000-some patients and stuff. It was a full-run city.
Sure.
They had doctors living on the grounds, nurses, everything. It was huge, you know. And it's one hell of a scary place. If you're in there, if you're sensitive enough and you see these things, you're feeling and know what's going on, it's just crazy. You know, it's, but I had to stay there, and I just bit my tongue and just kind of went along with stuff. There were a lot of good days, though. We can't say everything was bad and everything was rotten, but it wasn't. There was a lot of good days, you know.
that wraps up the second part of our conversation with Ronald. A big thank you to him for spending the time and sharing all of those stories with us. We greatly appreciate it. And thanks to you for being a supporter of the show and helping to keep us on the air. We would not exist without it. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.